the Buddha, this is the Dharma, this is the Sangha. I want to elaborate a little more on the topic of yesterday evening's Dharma talk. You might say that the illusion of self comes from viewing the flow of existence, time, the flow of immaculacy from the wrong perspective. And that the sense of self, the conviction, the belief that there is a separate self, there is a self and that it is separate, builds up over time through experience that seems to confirm an original point of confusion. And of course, as we see more deeply into our karmic history, this is indeed what we find. As I've often said, something happened. Beings jumped to conclusion. And in jumping to that conclusion, there's often an element of a certain kind of resolve. This, whatever has happened, I must never let this happen again, is a frequent form in which that, or is a form in which that resolve frequently manifests. I must never do that again. I must do that instead. Often these opinions formed in a moment of crisis are so often a partial truth, and that's part of the problem. They're most of the time they're not completely off base. But notice the way in which the language I use there, and that's a key to where the problem lies. This must never happen again. I must. The insistence. So over time, as a part of the process, which is the flow of existence, time, the flow of immaculacy, greed, hate, and delusion build up. And this conviction, the belief, the deep-seated belief that there is a separate self that comes into existence and that passes away. And the identification of this self with this body and mind, and the desire and clinging and the fear that accompany this delusion, this ignorance, they all deepen and darken over time. And they all seem to be confirmed by experience. Because birth and death do happen. Crises and horrific events keep popping up now and then in the course of the stream of karma. And so what happens is that beings end up basically bashing their head against the wall of their own insistence. the mental image that comes to mind is of an escalator. You know, the steps are moving, and yet, you know, the escalator itself is really not going anywhere. The steps are moving, but the escalator is not going anywhere. And someone is looking at the individual steps and missing the escalator, the fact that there's the escalator. Uji is like that. We look at the individual steps and we forget that the escalator itself isn't moving anywhere. That we're actually sitting here moving within eternity. And we see it only as change, and we see so many of the changes as being in opposition to, in some way, that resolve that we have made and the beings in our stream of karma have made, those resolves. I must never let this happen again. I must do this if this ever happens again. I must. Until though everywhere one looks, I'll get it out here, one just encounters the I must, you see. And others mustn't. I must and others mustn't. Or others must and I mustn't. The insistence. Burn Master used to say something that it's taken decades to filter in for me, and maybe it does for many other people too, but I'll count myself in this regard perhaps a rather slow learner, but I guess the important thing is that one learns eventually, and over time one does learn this. She said over and over again, the real truth does not insist on truth. The real truth does not insist on truth. So where there is the must, we need to be careful. We need to be very careful indeed. We're only seeing the steps on the escalator. We're not seeing the big picture. We're not seeing the big picture. We're seeing only the movement, only the gain and loss, only the coming and going. Sometimes only the victim and perpetrator. You know, you throw whatever opposite you want into it. Any opposite will plug in. Only the grief and joy. Only the wanting and frustration. Any pair of opposites will plug in. And as Dogen said in Rules for Meditation, when the opposites arise, the Buddha mind is lost. We're riding that escalator and really not going anywhere. But convinced we're going somewhere. The fundamental teachings of Buddhism, the training tools and the teachings are intended to help us with this kind of confusion, the deluded view of a self that comes into being and passes away, and comes into being and is extinguished, that deluded view. The insistence that goes with it, and the way these two form a kind of a self, a mutually reinforcing cycle through which greed, hate, and delusion are deepened, and the fundamental illusion of the separate self is hardened. Seemingly confirmed in experience. Meditation gives us the opportunity to get a deeper, more spiritual perspective on the events that have happened in the past and on the events of this very day. The precepts also give us that ability when we put them into practice. The precepts take the must out in the midst of daily life. Take the insistence out. And help us get that, gain that little bit of objectivity that is so important, that enables us to see the bigger picture and not just be locked into the habitual and sometimes deeply habitual emotional and mental reactions to particular events that resemble other particular events that happened in the past. When we were little children, when we were very little children, when we first came into this life, we had a freshness of perspective. For a while, everything was new, and you see this in little children and babies. You see them reacting to the newness of everything. And then a combination of the events of life and the remanifesting of old karma, the consequences of past karma from previous existences starting to kick in. It's starting to affect the way in which we experience the world, the combination of these things, and the way the two, again, often build on, you know, support one another and feed one another, tends to erode this naivete, this freshness of perspective, until you often see, you frequently see in just a few short years a child go from being having a delight and wonder with which they view the world to just the opposite, you know, sarcasm, cynicism, moroseness, disappointment. We have the opportunity in our training to choose to return to childlike, not childish, childlike naivete and sense of wonder and appreciation of the newness of each moment, really. Of its uniqueness, of its beauty, without denying the aspects of suffering that manifest within it. And whenever we choose to insist, and it's a choice we make, even if we're not aware of it, whenever we choose to insist, we take that burgeoning naivete and we put a clamp down on it. We put a lid down on it. We darken it. We put it in a shadow is the best way I can put it. We put it in a shadow. We put it in shadow. We stifle something. I've spoken of meditation and the precepts, and I emphasized yesterday evening meditation. I don't want to forget bowing, because that's why bowing is so important a part of our practice. Bowing is, a true bow is not insisting, it is accepting. I spoke last night in the latter part of my talk about the way in which the dark and light are kind of flashing at the present time for many of us. Half the day will be bright, half the day will be dark. One day will be bright, another day will be dark. Under certain circumstances, under certain conditions, this flashing can happen quite rapidly indeed. One can notice from moment to moment these kind of karmically consequential emotional states flowing through, some brighter, some darker. Sometimes some very dark, sometimes some very bright. How does a naive mind and heart view this experience, this flow of experience? If it's bright, appreciate it and bow to it and let it go. Don't try to hold on to it. You can't hold on to it. When it passes, let it pass. When it's dark, view it as an opportunity. I saw a lovely thing I saw a show. Part of a TV show the other day about a project in the Seattle area to help soldiers, former soldiers, who are still carrying a lot of the pain and the troubling memories of their period in combat, and combat-like situations. And they're using meditation that clearly comes from Buddhism, a loving meditation based on kind of reflections on loving kindness. I think drawn from the Theravadin school of Buddhism, I believe. And they're teaching this to people who don't, most of them have a clue about Buddhism. They've never mentioned Buddhism in what I saw of the show. But one of the soldiers who's being helped, and they all seem to be being helped considerably by this. One of the soldiers said a lovely thing. He said, he described his change in attitude towards the pain and the painful memories that arose at times. He said he used to view them as obstacles, but now he viewed it as a new opportunity. Something along those lines. I don't remember the exact words. And you could see they had been following this particular group of people for a while. And this is when a man who had very great pain, and you could see it in the earlier stages. And you just see the lovely look expression on his face, and the kind of Buddha nature just shining through his expression as he said this about this suffering that he had been living with for, I think in his case, if I remember, it was now about over 20 years. I think closer to 30 years, actually, if I remember correctly. And this is such good teaching, and such a spiritually sound approach to that which is spiritually difficult. To view the arising of the old negativity, the old pain, as an opportunity. This time I have the chance to get it right. This time, this old habitual darkness that is arising is giving me the opportunity to spiritually get a good workout here and really put meditation and the precepts to practice and not just succumb to the old habitual attitudes and the old habitual actions. Although the practice that I'm using as an example here, the case I've used as an example has a psychological emphasis. For some of the people, it may well lead to one day doing meditation as what it really is meant to be, as what really is, as contemplative prayer, as a fully religious practice. But one understands the reasons why one introduces people to meditation in a non-religious way, much less threatening to many people. So there are bright Buddhas manifesting from moment to moment, and there are dark Buddhas manifesting from moment to moment. And all are Buddhas. Everything that manifests on the surface of the great ocean of the eternal, whatever it may be, it still is a manifestation. A Buddha nature. Some manifestations of Buddha nature show us a direction that's helpful to go in. Some manifestations of Buddha nature show a direction that's helpful not to go in. Hermesi used to say, there's a Buddhist who show us what to do, and the Buddhist who show us what not to do. And all Buddhas teach. And all Buddhas teach the truth. It's up for us. It's up to us. It's our responsibility. Not the responsibility of other people or the world in general. It's our responsibility to learn to draw the correct, the helpful conclusions from our experience. And to learn where in our past we or someone else drew the wrong conclusion. And this resulted in suffering. You have to have, to do this, what River Master described as, you have to cultivate a kaleidoscopic attitude of mind. Especially when it's flashing alternately light and dark rapidly. You have to have a kaleidoscopic attitude of mind. Don't get stuck with the light. Don't get stuck with the dark. Just go on. Don't get stuck with it. If you get hit with a wave of especially intense feeling on either end of the spectrum, you know, sit still in the midst of it. Don't draw conclusions. It doesn't mean you're evil. It doesn't mean you're a saint. You know, it's very intense feelings of brightness, you know, love, compassion, light. People can draw the conclusion they're becoming something special. No one's becoming something special in this business. Similarly, you get a wave of horror, fear, deep self sense of worthlessness, feelings of worthlessness, you can draw the conclusion that you're something special in the other direction. You're an especially bad person, an especially unworthy person, especially poor trainee. Don't draw the conclusion. Is it just passing shadows, passing forms? I spoke last night about some ways in which we come to recognize eternity within the changing. There's one I didn't speak of that is really, for me, always the one that I come back to. It's the one that I experience as being like an umbilical cord running from my hara to directly to the eternal, to the true reality of things. And that is just faith. That natural, and it is natural, upward looking spark within that really nothing can extinguish. When one can't fall back on anything else, one can always fall back on that. One always has that to fall back on. All one has to do is just be still and look up. Just be still and look up. There it is. Sometimes it seems to be just the tiniest little point of light in the darkness. Sometimes, like the scripture says, seems to fill all space. As great as all space. It doesn't matter how big or small it seems. It is. It comes directly from Buddha nature. It is. Shri the Buddha, Shri the Dharma, Shri the Sangha.